Palestinians and Israelis may view each other with intractable mistrust or worse, but recently two writers from the opposing camps came by our studios to read from their work. Susan Abolawa is of Palestinian descent and the author of The Scar of David, a novel set in the world of the refugee camps. Margot Singer is an American Jew whose new book of stories is called The Pale of Settlement. Steve Paulson got them to put all their baggage down and answer some questions.
Now, there's some very interesting intersections between both of your books because you actually touch on some of the same ground. Obviously, you come at it from very different perspectives. I don't just mean political. I mean just in terms of how these events are framed in your books. For instance, you both deal with what happened in the Palestinian refugee camp of Jenin in 2002. And Susan, weren't you there during part of the violence?
I was, yeah. When I heard what was happening, I was working at a drug company at the time, and I just took my vacation and bought a ticket and went there. And what struck me, besides the, you know, the horror of it and the smell of death, was the near absence of anyone from the international community who wasn't an activist. There was a scarcity of reporters. And also, as you may know, the people who ended up writing the official UN report did not step foot in that camp, nor did they interview any of the victims or the soldiers who were there.
Wasn't there a big controversy? And in fact, isn't there still a big controversy about how many people were actually killed in the camp? And I know the Israeli government says one thing. Many Palestinians who were there put the number much higher.
Yes. You know, I personally helped dig up three bodies, and I saw several more that other workers were digging up. There were reports, eyewitness reports, that in the 2 weeks that the camp was closed after the fighting had subsided and Israel was firmly in there, that bodies were being carried out to some undisclosed location. I think this was touched upon in either the Amnesty or Human Rights Watch report. But I also know that hundreds of people remained missing at that time. Their bodies weren't found. So, you know, I mean, whether it was 50 or 300, the controversy was whether to call it a massacre or not. I don't know where you put the number.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny that you use that word because that actually comes up, Margot, in one of your stories in your collection. There are journalists who are reporting on this, Western journalists, and, well, there's a debate about whether to call it a massacre. Could you read that passage?
Sure. On Monday, Debbie filed a piece saying that the Israelis were pulling out of Kalkalia and Tulkarem, but that the fighting in Jenin was growing worse. She quoted the director of the Jenin hospital saying that Israeli tanks were not allowing ambulances to evacuate the dead and wounded from the camp. The Palestinian Authority issued a statement today claiming that, quote, the Sabra and Shatila massacres are being repeated in Jenin, unquote. Here in New York, it was still raining. They were predicting that it might change over to sleet later in the day. In Israel, it was probably nice and warm. Once, she'd gone with her cousin, Gavi, to the Galilee to pick irises and anemones in the spring. She cradled the receiver against her shoulder, squinting at the screen. "Can we really say that it's a massacre?" she said. "We're not saying it," Debbie said after a slight delay. "The PA is." Susan scrolled down the page. "As many as 100 Palestinians have been killed in Jenin alone." The line crackled, fading in and out. "Where are you, in your car?" Susan said. "You sure about 100? We need attribution. Yesterday we said 74 over the past 10 days, and not just in Jenin. And what about the Israeli side?" 100 is what everyone is saying," Debbie said, her voice abruptly clear. "And from what I've heard," she added, "it's probably much worse than that. But they're still not letting journalists into the camp." Susan backspaced over "as many as" and typed "at least" instead. She looked at her watch. It was getting late. "Okay," she said. "I'll see what Bill thinks. If I need anything else, I'll call you back."
Now, this is such an interesting passage because, of course, this is a very real issue for journalists. I mean, how do you label something like this in a news story? It's not as obvious that this fits into a collection of short stories, into fiction. Tell me how you came to write a passage like that.
Well, the character Susan is a journalist, and I really struggled with this story. In one early draft, I wanted her to go over and do what Susan did and be there. And because I didn't have the chance to do that myself, it was a terrible draft. And so I put her in New York in the newsroom, which I think is where a lot of American journalists were. And she's working with Debbie, who's a stringer, who's over there, you know, calling in dispatches on her cell phone. So that's where the scene came out of. And I wanted to somehow capture the struggle to figure out what's happening and to put it into the language of the news story. And the wonderful thing about writing fiction, and I'm interested in fiction that sort of spans that border of fiction and creative nonfiction, is that you can step back and allow the text itself to raise questions that the news story format doesn't let you do. I personally did a ton of, as much research as I could. I read all the reports, UN and Human Rights Watch, the Time Magazine, Newsweek wrap-ups. I read all the daily dispatches in one newspaper that I imagined was the one my character worked for. And I tried to incorporate the reality that the so-called facts being reported were sort of all over the place, and yet to keep the perspective of a good-hearted journalist trying to do the right thing.
Well, Susan, let me ask how you approach this in your novel. I mean, you were there. Obviously, mm-hmm. this experience affected you powerfully. And I think you wrote some newspaper columns about it, right?
I did, yeah.
So how did it figure into the shaping of this novel?
Actually, my experience in Jenin was in some ways the impetus for writing this novel. I was overwhelmed by the sense of how much Jenin had been violated and how their story just was obscured in so many ways. And that was, in a large part, the drive to want to tell their story. And, you know, in doing that, I wanted to tell the Palestinian story. And to do that, I think being historically accurate is imperative.
But why do fiction? I mean, why not stay with newspaper accounts? Why not write a book of nonfiction?
I think fiction has a unique power to tell history. You know, there are so many nonfiction books about the Middle East conflict that are written in the cold prose of textbooks and numbers and facts. But it's an entirely different experience to live with a family as it moves through that history.
Could you read a passage from your book, which is talking about some things that happened in Jenin?
Here we are now. I see his contact lenses swimming in his eyes and sweat bubbling on his forehead. I feel an inexplicable serenity. Death, and the certainty of it, is exacting its due respect and repose before it takes my hand. But he does not shoot. He blinks hard, and a solitary drop of sweat travels from his brow, down the side of his face. I watch it fall, and note his smooth skin, still too young to need a regular shave. The power he holds over life is a staggering burden for so young a man. He knows it and wants it lifted. He is too handsome not to have a girlfriend nervously waiting for his return. He would rather be with her than with his conscience, with his burden, or with me. I know he has killed before. He knows I know. But he has never seen his victim's face. My eyes, soft with a mother's love and a dead woman's calm, weigh him down with his own power, and I think he will cry. Not now. Later, when he is face to face with his dreams and his future. I feel sad for him. Sad for the boy bound to the killer. I'm sad for the youth betrayed by their leaders for symbols and flags and war and power. For an instant, I think he could be my nephew. But no, Yuri has no doubts of his duty to kill for Israel, and Jacob does not serve in the military. This soldier is not my nephew. Strange, strange. He is handsome, and I loving.
Susan Abulawa is the founder of Playgrounds for Palestine. Her novel is called The Scar of David. Margot Singer's written a collection of linked stories called The Pale of Settlement. Steve Paulson talked with them